The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
In today's Info Enema, Champions League is back, sort of. And at Old Trafford, Man United on song as Memphis plays the Blues with a stunning double. We've Celtic Malmo and other playoff news. Transfer talk. Pedro performs that old Costello classic, I don't want to go to Chelsea, unless Man United's the alternative, in which case. While Leicester tried to do better at home by getting an in-law over to stay. Gokhan in-law. There's Euro news. Pull up a pillow as saucy pirate Jim H purrs his way through a Serie A preview, and our special Premier League roundup featuring Everton, Man City and Arsenal Liverpool. After they got jammy with the Cherries last Monday, will Liverpool's luck run out at the Emirates this time? All of that and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Golly, everybody, it's a packed pod today. I mean, literally, we are heaving. Here's Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Here's Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Here's Greg Bukowski.
Hiya.
And as mentioned, here's James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
Arg. Arg. What do the following people have in common? Steve Coogan, Nigella Lawson, Mark Strong and Barry Glendenning. No, not that, Ian McIntosh. They're all shareholders in Lewis, the football club, where you've just spent the last couple of days, Greg. Why?
Just a little family break.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. We're house sitting in Lewis, which is a nice place to sit right. In someone's house.
Right.
You know, they have little corporate chalets at the Dripping Pan. You could have stayed in one of those.
I didn't see over the wall into the ground because we were at a children's playground next door. But, you know, I'm sure it was very nice in there.
Hmm. It no longer tilts the way it once did, alarmingly. Isn't that right, Dripping Pan? Or does it still do? Is it still inclined?
I think it is, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Ian, you spent the last couple of days going to see football in Plymouth.
Yes.
Via Carlisle.
Yes.
Why was that?
That's a difficult question.
All right.
I saw it when the fixtures came out and thought, bloody hell, that's a long journey for a Tuesday night. I wonder what that's like. And if someone had just tripped me up then and knocked me unconscious, that probably would have made this week a lot easier. But nevertheless, for the good people of ESPN, I went up to Carlisle, got on the bus with them, went down for the game, saw them get tonked 4-1, stayed on the bus all the way back to Carlisle and then came back to London. And the ridiculous thing is, I'm still recovering from that. On Tuesday, they're going to do it all again because they've got QPR away in the cup.
Wow.
And then the more you look at it, they're doing it pretty much every other week because there's only four sort of really northern teams in League Two.
Right.
Hartlepool, Morecambe, Accrington, teams like that. But they're, you know, they're at least an hour and a half's drive away. Everyone else is more than 170 miles away.
These Carlisle fans, are they extraordinarily dedicated or just not very happy at home?
I started the story thinking, well, they're clearly insane. Clearly insane. They're covering about 12,000, 13,000 miles every season.
Mm.
It's like this whole wonderful community on there. Mm. Yeah, we were 2.5 hours down the road to Plymouth before someone actually mentioned the football. Apart from that, it was just like a kind of old-fashioned trip to the seaside. It's brilliant. People had sandwiches and pies and drinks. It was spot the ball. It was lovely.
Wow. All right. That's a heartwarming tale of the way that amidst this corporate era, the real football, you know, still pokes its way through the cracks.
You've just read out my final paragraph.
Ah, lovely.
Now, on the subject of corporate football, didn't you get someone to pay for this expedition while on the way?
I was contacted by someone from Skybet about an hour into the journey. Who I think, like me, were bewildered at the loyalty and dedication of these people. And they very generously paid for all of the travel and the match tickets.
Wow.
Then there were nine lads in a minibus who were also headed down, who left a little bit before us. And they were on Twitter, frantically running around other bookmakers trying to find their own sponsorship. So Skybet paid for their travel as well. And then went on a search around Twitter trying to find other Carlisle fans so they could pay for all of them. All of which was very nice.
We're big Carlisle fans here, Skybet. We love them. I am moved to mention the midweek football. I'm not sure how much you would have caught of Tuesday's action at Old Trafford. Yeah, there was Man United Brugge, or Bruges, to use the traditional pronunciation, which featured a hilarious own goal to kick off proceedings. But then, wow, cometh the hour, cometh the Memphis. Who saw this? Greg, did you see this?
I thought Memphis Depay was fantastic. I was really impressed with his movement. Like, as a wide player, he was able to cut inside, also go down the wing. So fast, very intelligent. And it was his crossing that I was so impressed. I know he scored two goals, but his delivery into the box was fantastic.
But his goals were brilliant.
Yeah, his goals were fantastic. And that's what United have, paid all that money for, I suppose. Like, they want to have somebody with a cutting edge, not only just somebody who can, get decent crosses into the box and create chances, but also add to the tally of goals that they're going to need this season, because there's a lot, there's a huge onus on Wayne Rooney to score this season, and they're going to need goals from elsewhere unless they bring a striker in before the transfer window closes. But yeah, particularly I thought his deliveries into the box were fantastic, and the ball he put in the final minute, which made the tie so much easier for them when they go to Belgium for Fellaini's head, was brilliant.
Yeah, lovely. They should be all right for that second leg, no?
They should be, yeah. I mean, they were pretty unlucky to concede that late goal, but it had been coming a long time. They'd been on the back foot. I think the referee was about to blow the whistle and he kind of waited to see what would happen, at the end of that move, and they scored, so they were slightly fortunate. But I thought Bruges gave a very good account of themselves. The right back was, he had a horrible evening, obviously, trying to mark Depay, or Memphis, as he prefers to be called, and didn't seem to learn from his mistakes. And I might be being pretty critical on him because he was fairly unplayable at that time, but he kept letting them in, on his strong foot and getting crosses in. But scored two, created the other, and missed a couple of good chances as well. Mm. And his contribution to the post-match interview was superb as well, because he barely reached Marouane Fellaini's elbow. It was quite a comical sight.
In other United news this week, they finally resolved that long courtship of the Barcelona star Pedro with him signing for Chelsea. Largely because he didn't want to play for Van Gaal. That seems to be the story here.
Yeah, maybe Victor Valdez picked up the phone and said,
Apparently he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they need him anyway? And do they need Sadio Mane, who's their latest?
Well, it's curious, isn't it, how Chelsea have gone and signed Pedro. Mm. And we all know that Chelsea in recent years have this habit of hijacking bids for players that other clubs want. You think of Salah, you think of Willian.
John Obi Mikel
back in the day, and now Pedro. And also, let's not forget the supposed second choice to Sergio Ramos was Nicolas Otamendi, who today has gone and signed for Manchester City. So again, they've missed out on these targets, which I suppose brings further questions about Ed Woodward. What was he doing when he flew to Barcelona and Pedro's entourage supposedly didn't know he was even there? And also, he seems to have put the blame on Van Gaal by saying, look, he changed his mind on Pedro, didn't want him anymore. So it'll be interesting to see whether that's true when he speaks to the media on before this weekend's game, because he's kind of, I suppose, thrown Van Gaal under a bus.
Miguel Delaney made the interesting point yesterday that United's attitude, once it became apparent Pedro was going to Chelsea, was very much, well, we didn't want to get off with that attractive girl anyway. And as they saw her leave the nightclub with some other bloke, their nemesis. And now it looks like they're struggling to pull her ugly friend as well.
Although Saido not in any way an unattractive.
No.
But to go back to your question about whether they need Pedro, I think behind Rooney they've got lots of bright players, and particularly we've seen Yanisai come back in the team, make a decisive impact, seen Mata, Memphis obviously getting his first goals. The issue really is what to do with Rooney, who's been quite disappointing so far, that back heel for Memphis aside the other night. And also, going forward, what about the defence? That has done really well so far, but do they really see Smalling and Blind, in particular Blind, being their centre-back partnership throughout the rest of the season?
I've been intrigued by Blind playing at centre-back, in that everybody goes on about him being a small centre-back, and he's 5'10", I think 5'11". He's probably an inch taller than Fabio Cannavaro, who wasn't half bad. And it's just, I wonder whether this is a thing that might happen now in modern football, in that you very rarely get two big centre forwards. You don't see them anymore, two big centre forwards playing up front in a 4-4-2 system. So you've got one big centre half who can deal with a lone striker, and then you've got another centre half, doesn't necessarily have to be a monstrous player, if he's a good footballer on the floor, does he then become the ball player at the back? And if he's intelligent because he's played in midfield and other positions, can he read the game better? And that seems to me that might be something other clubs might look at, because there's always this thing that you've got to bring in another centre-back, a real commanding figure. But if you've got one of those, then why not try and have another footballer there? And if you've got Fellaini in your squad and you've got right-backs and left-backs who have got a little bit of height, on set pieces you can deal with the, you know, the aerial disadvantage you might be under by having a slightly smaller centre-back.
Manchester United have these three areas of uncertainty: the goalkeeper, the defence and the centre forward, and they're still running around chasing more and more attacking midfielders.
I suppose the defence has been the most encouraging part of their season so far. You know, clean sheets in both their league games, Smalling man of the match in the first game, Blin man of the match in the second game. They only concede against Bruges because it's a deflected own goal. So it is kind of that lack of spark up front that they're missing.
Right, is that going to change, do you think, when they host Newcastle in the early game Saturday? Newcastle, who are fresh from a 2-0 defeat at Swansea, Steve McClaren making his return to Old Trafford. They have terrible away form to Newcastle. They've only won once at Old Trafford, I think, in the Premier League era. That was a couple of years ago. Jan Mats out suspended, so you've got a reshuffled defence, which against, say, a Memphis Depay in this kind of form could equal pain.
Well, and also it might be the game that Rooney needs, because he's got an excellent record against Newcastle, scored 12 goals in his career against them, got 7 assists. So this might be finally the time where we see him, I don't know, rediscover his goal-scoring touch. But Newcastle, I suppose, just need to keep all 11 men on the pitch. I mean, Mitrovic should have been sent off in the first game. Jan Mat got sent off in the second game. And
Mitrovic should also have been sent off in the second game.
And McLaren having to come out and defend his team and saying, we can play football, we're not just a group of kickers. So, have to see.
Rooney needs to do something. He's already hitting out at the press, saying that, you know, one bad game and everyone's all over it. When, you know, really it's been two bad games. He wasn't particularly decent against Tottenham either.
Have you seen the shots on target stat? How many games in 2015 has he had more than one shot on target?
One. I don't know. Get out.
And it was back in February.
Really?
Yeah.
Good Lord. I spoke to Rooney in the summer for ESPN, and he was adamant that centre forward was his position. That was where he was back to playing. That was where he played best. It spoken to the manager that this was happening. It was forthright and defiant, putting his claim out.
He's really made it his own.
Yeah, it's not been a great start thus far.
Paul Scholes was saying the other night that he should be played further back.
You look at these, you know, these clever heat maps and stuff, and there's just, you see, I think he had one touch on the ball in the box against Villa.
This might be skewed. I just have the impression he might be hotter than most players that might meddle with the technology. I don't know why. Also because, you know, with the less hair, it'll radiate more. Just saying. Man United looking to go 3 out of 3 when they take on Newcastle. Liverpool as well have had 2 straight 1-0 wins. The last one, though, Greg, could easily have been 1-0 to Bournemouth.
It could have, yeah.
Maybe should have.
Yeah, well, it should be. There was a goal which you couldn't see why there was a free kick given in the box against them. And Coutinho was clearly offside, clearly interfering with play when Benteke nicked in behind him and scored that goal. Although, that said, I thought Liverpool did have a few other chances and perhaps could have scored a couple. But I can understand why people are saying it was a fortunate win. It was, but I'd also say there were flashes within that game of Benteke and Coutinho getting an understanding, which was you know, promising for Rodgers. Benteke had such a limited pre-season in that they brought him in and he just trained and he didn't play with any of the other players. Like with the first team, he was sent to play for the half at Swindon and then he was straight in at Stoke. So I think I was quite impressed with how Benteke played, given that he's had, you know, not much practice at all with the players he's now finding, you know, in and around him. So
I thought it was quite a frustrating performance in general from Liverpool against Bournemouth.
Yeah, it was. Although I'd still say the confidence. I remember Liverpool starting the season similarly, when, you know, the very good season when they almost won the league, with 3 1-0 victories on the bounce, and a lot of that comes down to confidence and players being brought in and getting to know each other and starting to gel. And I think, you know, it's lucky that they've got 6 points now, because that means they can go into the Arsenal game with a little bit of the pressure off, because had they lost at Stoke in that first game, given what happened there last season, that could have been really difficult, even if they'd have drawn that game. But now they go in facing Arsenal, you know, with maximum points, and I think I can see it possibly being a draw, because they don't have to really go at Arsenal. you can go there, try and rely on the defence somewhat and hope that Benteke perhaps on the break is he's quite physical and can give Arsenal, you know, quite a lot of trouble. So
does Rodgers do that? I mean, does that fit into the Rodgers mindset?
Well, they've been a little bit more direct, not in playing longer balls, but with playing balls into Benteke's feet, quite vertical balls straight into his feet, and he's able to hold the ball up so well and involve other players. So I can imagine how they could counter attack and possibly cause Arsenal some problems. I think the other thing is that Henderson might be out on Monday, which isn't. It's not the worst thing in the world. I think Henderson, you know, is obviously a very important player for Liverpool, but there's. When Chan's played in the last two games, I think Liverpool have played the best football because he looks a more natural controlling footballer in midfield in a deeper position and allows Milner to play that position he wants to play, which is a little bit further forward, getting involved with the front players. And I think if there's any doubt about Henderson, he will start Chan, and that could benefit Liverpool and mean that they actually keep possession a little bit better and perhaps are a little bit more fluid than they were in the two games so far.
4-1 to the Arsenal on your last visit, on Liverpool's last visit. What do you chaps think is going to happen this time?
When Liverpool came so close to winning the championship the season before last, the reason everyone said they didn't was because of their defence, because they conceded so many goals. And that was an issue again last season. Whereas this year, they're yet to concede. I think they've only had 3 shots on target against them, which is the best in the league. So it's kind of, again, one of those curious things where it's actually the attack which is misfiring at the moment. Coutinho scored the winner against Stoke, which was something out of nothing. Their winner against Bournemouth was an offside goal. I think the story of their season so far has been how much better defensively they've been.
Right. Dejan Lovren's been fantastic,
right.
And particularly against Stoke, he was outstanding. So,
but against Sanchez and Giroud.
The only thing I'd say about Lovren is he's so prone to getting drawn out of position.
You're not trusting him yet, are you?
No, it's somebody with cleverer movement like Sanchez, who could perhaps drag him away from Skirtle. You can drag him out, and he just goes running after someone like a headless chicken. He smells blood, and meanwhile Skirtle's left holding the fort, and I think that's where Liverpool could be found out. The other thing is the fullbacks so far, I think, have done really well. Joe Gomez is 18 and has performed really well. Klein is obviously he's got a bigger billing, but he's still quite a young player. And they've both performed really well, but they'll have a much bigger test, and I'm sure Wenger will tell Sanchez, Ozil, Ramsey, even if Walcott starts, those players to be a little bit, to use intelligent movement, because they're not natural wingers, any of those. They'll move in and out and perhaps could drag Klein and Gomez out of position because they're more inexperienced. So it'll be interesting to see what Wenger does to target the younger fullbacks.
All right, Gomez is a centre-back by nature, is that right?
He's playing left back for Liverpool. Yeah, he'd possibly be a centre back, but so far it's like a lot of defenders these days. They get billed as one, and they end up playing in other positions. And he's 18, so he's still finding his feet, whatever position he may end up playing in.
Well, all right, okay. Barry, what do you think? Arsenal, Liverpool?
I'd go for an Arsenal win.
Yeah.
On the evidence of what I've seen so far this season, but.
Right.
Not with a huge amount of confidence.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's Arsenal, isn't it?
It is Arsenal. And it's Liverpool.
It's Peter Cech.
Hey, we're going to take a very quick pause, and then we're back with more of those Champions League playoffs. Ooh.
Producer Ben here, listeners, reminding you that the Football Weekly Roadshow is headed your way. We'll be in the Northwest in September for a night of ungodly football frolics at Manchester Cathedral. That's part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And then in October, we're headed to the seaside and a Friday night spot at the Brighton Comedy Festival. Badum and indeed Tish. We'll be announcing more dates and more destinations on our UK tour soon. For more information on all of the Football Weekly live events and to book your tickets, head to theguardian.com/guardianlive.
Hey, Bulbo Biggins, who says, I know you get a lot of grief for not commenting on Scottish football enough, but I'd probably prefer it if you... probably prefer it if you didn't bother talking about our games. He then goes on an interesting kind of point about how Celtic's big thing has become the Champions League qualifiers and how 6 teams have become specialised in this. Bati Borisov, the most successful side. If they qualify this season, it'll be 4 out of 5 attempts because they're 1-0 up against Partizan. We're coming on Celtic in a second.
Are we allowed to?
Yeah, come on, Bulbo. you busy yourself with something else, make yourself a cup of tea. And Barry, you tell us about Celtic, who look in the driving seat, or do they after that late goal from Malmo? 3-2, yeah?
They looked in the driving seat after 10 minutes when they were 2-0 up, and they let Malmer, I believe they're pronounced, I was told.
Well, we got told the other night that we were pronouncing it correctly when we said Malmö.
Malmö.
Malmö. Malmö. Right. Yep. Well, I'm going to call them Malmö.
All right, then.
Which is what I've called them for my entire life, since I became aware of their existence. Anyway, Jo Inge Berge, and our resident Scandinavian, Marcus Christensen, he coached me on how to say his name this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
That was very authentic.
Jo Inge Berge, who was on loan at Celtic from Cardiff City last season and was pretty much a laughing stock among Celtic fans. And he came back and really stuck the knife into them with two goals, one of which was smashed into the net when Celtic failed to clear a corner. Because apparently they spent the whole game, their concentration was somewhat disturbed by the fact that they were behaving like pigs and children,
right,
according to the Malmo goalkeeper, who was not happy with their behaviour. He singled out Scott Brown and the substitute Nadir Sifsi for particular opprobrium.
How do you pronounce the name of Malmo's manager? Is it Aga Haraid or something?
I don't know what their manager's name is.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, he said, Malmo's manager said, we'll attack them at home, play our normal game. Hopefully it'll be enough. We saw Celtic against Inverness on Saturday. We know they don't have the legs for 90 minutes, which I guess was borne out by the way that the game went on Wednesday.
Well, yeah, that was a pretty subtle, well, unsubtle dig at his opposite number, I would suggest. But if Celtic do go out, I mean, they do have the advantage, but there isn't much between the teams, and if they do go out, they only have themselves to blame, because they should have closed that game out by half-time yesterday.
Well, watching Celtic's like watching George Galloway give a speech. It's like you're just really impressed by the passion, but you just know that at some point there's going to be something really horrible happen, and that's what happened at the end. It's just going to go wrong at some point.
Would you like me to be your pushy cat?
Yeah, yeah. And you just saw that at the end. There was some kind of aggro going on between a Malmo player and a Celtic player, and this corner was given, and you could see Virgil van Dijk was going, no, what's happening? And then the corner came in. Virgil van Dijk he got a bit overexcited, tried to clear it, and they scored the goal, which may well prove crucial if Malmo then go and win 1-0 over. Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk's been linked with so many Premier League clubs in the last couple of years, and I would imagine that could end after yesterday.
Well, okay, well, the return is next Tuesday, and that's going to be very exciting. The other playoffs, that was a tight game. Lazio, a little bit fortunate to be a goal up against Bayer Leverkusen.
Really fortunate. I think Leverkusen outplayed them for vast stages of that game. And Lazio looked in trouble, particularly when Miroslav Klose came off. But off from the bench came Keita Balde-Diao, who was the one who got the winner. And what a goal it was. He has been a little bit unsettled in pre-season because he was left out of the Super Cup against Juventus in Shanghai. I think when Pioli basically made a substitution that wasn't him, he said, look, you're not bringing me on. He kind of went on strike. But justified his place, and yeah, they need a striker because Klose has been out injured. He's going to be out now, but they might not go and sign one because he made the difference. So it's still very tight, I think.
They're being linked with all sorts of people. What's the story with Ravel Morrison?
Well, there is no story. That's what he said. Because again, there were reports in the papers over here that he was considering abandoning Lazio. I think it's the second instance of those kind of stories coming out. He said, look, it's all rubbish.
Right. Okay. In other playoff news, Valencia have a 3-1 lead to take to the Stade Louis II after their first game against Monaco. Basel are in trouble. They got held to a 2-2 draw at home by Israeli side Maccabi. Shakhtar won 1-0 at Rapid Vienna. Great little film on Shakhtar in exile there. Actually on the Guardian website by
Andy Brassel.
Andy Brassel, yeah, very interesting. Dinamo Zagreb won 1-0 at Skindibru. It was Skindibru They won 1-0.
Can our resident Scandinavian pronunciation expert...
No, Skinder, Skinderba. Astana... Thank goodness I'm not doing a Champions League show this year. Astana 1-0 against Apoel. And yeah,
the cycling team.
Yeah, Astana. Could be the first Kazakh side to ever make it through. Anyway, that's that Euro business. Luckily, that's out the way for another... a week, and we can get back to proper names like Everton and Man City. Ooh, Barry, you called Man City's win over Chelsea last time. I think you might even have had the scoreline, did you?
Well, I said I wouldn't be surprised if City beat Chelsea 2 or 3-0.
Oh, there you go.
So,
and you weren't?
No, I wasn't surprised.
Right. Okay. What's going
to
happen?
Although I was surprised enough to hedge a bet I had on them. Ooh. A weekend... accumulator was riding on a City win and I bottled it and hedged, so I didn't have the courage of my convictions.
I wonder if you will this time when they visit Goodison Park, which hasn't proved the happiest of hunting grounds for them in recent seasons. They've only won one of their last six visits. And Everton, of course, looking ever so exciting last weekend, weren't they?
Yeah, when I left Romelu Lukaku out of my fantasy football team. Which was devastating.
Yeah, it should be a cracker of a game if Everton play as well as they did against Southampton. You know, they were relying on the counter-attack there, which I suppose is unsurprising considering they were away from home. They would need to be... You'd think they'd need to be more attack-minded at Goodison, but considering the opposition, that might not be an option. So, I'd say it could be a cracking game, yeah. Mm.
City dominating and Everton trying to hit on the break.
Yeah.
Man City today, Thursday, confirming their £34 million acquisition of Nicolas Otamendi, one of the top defenders in the Liga. I'm a bit curious. So this whole financial fair play thing has completely gone out the window for them, because there were these court cases that were pending, one in particular, which a lot of big clubs had kind of sponsored, which effectively brought a legal challenge to UEFA's restrictions. But there are other clubs like Inter and Roma in Italy that seem to be still operating under the financial fair play restrictions. So has it gone out the window or not?
Well, technically, no. Right. And technically, any alterations have only been made to new owners, proving
Milan.
Proving their investment. But there are still a number of court cases kind of... you know, some way down the pipeline. And it feels, this is just my personal feeling, but it feels like the thin end of the wedge. It feels like UEFA are beginning to creak.
Well, it's certainly the way City are behaving, and to an extent PSG as well, would bear that out. But that's quite an exciting back line they'll have now. So, another 3-0 win then for City? What's your take?
I think City will win.
I think City will win narrowly 2-1.
James?
I think they're irresistible at the moment. They're playing some really good football. Yeah.
Meanwhile, the two sides that have already been beaten 3-0 by City this season meet each other in a quirk of fate at the Hawthorns. West Brom, this is, and Chelsea. Can Chelsea finally get a win?
No.
They lost 3-0 here last time.
Yeah.
They had pretty much gone on holiday. They were playing in flip-flops.
But, Ian, three of their last four... visits to the Hawthorns have ended in defeat.
And there's the curse of P.
There's the curse of P. Tell us more, James.
Well, Mourinho's lost all these games to managers.
Six games to managers.
Whose surnames begin with P.
Right.
Be peeing in his pants.
Nicely done. And they and then he's facing two more. Well, actually two that he's already faced and lost to.
Who are they? Pards?
Wait, this one here, Pulis, and then Pards afterwards.
Pardiola.
Pardiola. Well, but then he's got a P of his own now in Pedro. Now, some people, here's Rory McIlvoy and Tim Crutchley, who basically make the same point. What are the odds on Jose ostracising Pedro by Xmas? What is Jose's problem with flighty creative midfielders? Will Pedro be any different? Given the example of Salah, Mata, Cuadrado, De Bruyne.
His problem with De Bruyne, by all accounts, was when Mourinho dropped him for the European Super Cup, De Bruyne threw his toys out the pram. Mm. His mentality went completely to which Mourinho was quite shocked. He got another chance in the team, and that didn't go so well. And I think Mourinho actually called De Bruyne into his office to show him stats, to show where it was all going wrong, which De Bruyne didn't take to. And in the end, Mourinho just washed his hands of him.
Didn't want anyone throwing their toys out the pram at that club. That would be terrible. Well, okay, that's De Bruyne. What about Salah, Mata and Cuadrado? Mata never threw. He once banged his seat a little bit visibly when being taken off, but apart from that, what
Mourinho wants at Chelsea is a player who can cope, who has that mentality that he can cope with being in and out of the side where needed over a long season. Pedro certainly has that.
Wasn't this whole move, though, billed as him being finally tired of being the eternal substitute at the new camp?
I don't think he's going to play as few games as he's played in recent seasons at Barcelona. But he ticks two boxes. One, that he can cope with being rested here and there. And two, that he's very good going back and protecting his fullback. He's got lots of energy. He's quick going back. He's not going to sit up top scratching his bottom, which is where Mourinho's had a few problems with a few other players. And you look at the transformation of Eden Hazard from sort of flighty, creative type to shutting down that flank. It's exactly the kind of player that Mourinho wants.
It's a scary thought, isn't it? Hazard on one side, Pedro on the other, and I suppose Costa at the middle. Yeah,
if Costa can find his sharpness again. He looked sort of pretty tetchy and a little off his touch against Man City.
Hazard, right. Isn't it the greatest start to the season?
Well, that's also true. Speaking of not the greatest starts, will John Terry start this weekend?
According to Niall Quinn, he's finished. It's over.
Do you know what? We all had a chuckle about that, but there's this story from within the training ground, within Cobham,
What are your sources, Jimbo?
I can't reveal that, but they're exceptionally well-placed. This wasn't a surprise when he was taken off. You saw maybe the story in the last couple of days that Mourinho actually didn't have him training with the first team prior to the Man City trip. And then he wasn't going to put him in the starting lineup. And then he decided at the last minute to put him in, only to then take him off at halftime. Whether that was a message or not, I don't know. But the backstory supposedly on this is that Mourinho is not talking to Terry anymore. He will not address him. And it's a little bit like
to bring him off.
Well, to bring him off, yeah. But it's all tell Terry to do this or tell Terry to do that. And it's been likened to the situation when one or two other big players have been deemed at the end of the road. So he's decided, well, he's history now. He doesn't want anything more to do with him. Supposedly.
Chelsea's Casillas kind of situation.
Yeah, very much.
It's a terrible time for that to happen as well, right at the beginning of the season. I mean, you often get stories like that happening, you know, halfway through towards the end of a season. But at this moment in time, it's really bad. And they're constantly linked with John Stones, and I find that quite bizarre because John Stones is a player who's a very good footballer. He's not defensively in the same mould as Terry, and it reminds me a little bit of David
Lewis.
What's
the difference?
Well, no, he likes to play. He's a ball playing centre back. He's not an enforcer. He's somebody who would benefit from being next to somebody who's an enforcer. I think he could be another David Lewis situation in that he wants to come out and play too much football and will probably anger Mourinho.
Barry, you've already called this as a West Brom win.
I just don't think Chelsea will beat them.
They could be in the bottom three after three rounds of action. They'll be
in good company.
The other big transfer news, well, one of the other big bits of transfer news is Gökhan İnler joining Leicester ahead of their clash this weekend against Spurs. What will İnler bring to Leicester's party?
Well, he's a metronomic midfield player, ball-playing midfield player. But I was quite underwhelmed by him at Napoli. He got a big move from Udinese. Their scouting system found him when he was, a nobody in Switzerland, paid $100,000 for him. And they sold him in the same summer that they sold Alexis Sanchez to Barcelona for a huge profit. I think he cost Napoli something like $17.5 million. They expected him to maybe push them on towards the league title. And I think what was quite apparent at Napoli in comparison with Roma and Juventus was their midfield just wasn't up to it. And Inler was a big part of that.
Do we know what he's going to wear when they unveil him?
Oh, yes, because he was presented with a lion's mask.
Right. You'd like something, foxy.
That would be nice. I don't ask for much.
But I think for a mid-table team or a team that's aspiring to consolidate a place in mid-table like Leicester, he's a good player, but I don't think he'll make the same impact as Cambiasso.
They look like a team right now, don't they, Leicester?
I know, this is a very interesting game because I think it will tell us a lot about whether Spurs are just going to be the usual Spurs this season or even worse than that. So I think Leicester will give them a good test. They need some steel in midfield urgently, Spurs. They let a lot of players go during the summer, midfielders, and they haven't replaced them yet. And I think Leicester could give them the runaround.
Mm. They feel they need a centre-forward as well. A move for Berahino, which has been turned down. I'm not sure if they're coming back in. Soldado's finally made his way to Villarreal. Ian, you're chuckling. Did you see his presentation?
Yes, he was asked to kick a football into a stand full of fans, and he missed.
Twice. Yeah, I mean, to clarify, they're basically sat in the lower end of the stand. They all group there, and he does a few keepy-uppies, and then obligingly hoofs the ball at them in the upper row, and then he does it again.
The poor sod. Last season, because at Tottenham, the press box is right next to the bench, so you see a few things that you wouldn't ordinarily see. I think it was Leicester beating them in the cup. Soldado was pulled off after 70 minutes of diligent, hard work, but no real clear-cut chances, no goals, no nothing. He was pulled off. He got a kind of appreciative round of applause. And he sat on the bench taking his boots off for about 10, 15 minutes, just shaking his head and talking to himself. The man just looked completely gone.
Poor chap.
All burnt out, the pause. I wanted to get out and give him a hug, but the stewards frown upon that kind of thing. Mm. I hope it goes well for him over there.
Yeah, let's hope so. Anyway, time for another pause, producer Pete. All right, then. Then we're back with yet more Premier League. And don't forget, still to come, there's James H's big Serie A preview.
Oh.
Mmm.
This week I interviewed Kieran Seal, who's the captain of the English men's blind football team.
All right.
And their European Championships start this weekend in Hereford.
Okay.
And if anyone is in or around the Hereford area or fancy something to do over the weekend, they would very much like people to come and support them.
All right.
And having seen some blind football during the Paralympics, I can recommend it as very entertaining.
Cool. Excellent. Norwich Stoke. Who had this one?
I'm going to it.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Why are you looking forward to it, Barry?
Well, because it's my first game of the season.
Yeah.
And it's at Norwich where you get looked after very well. And it could be the debut of Stoke's new midfielder, Jerdan Shaqiri, who I've always thought is a terrific player. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how he gets on in the Premier League. I thought when he came to Stoke, and the fee wasn't huge either, I thought, oh, he must be a ne'er-do-well, you know, there must be a wrong-un for him to be, you know, going to, let's face it, a pretty unfashionable club for not that much money. But having read up on him and all that, it doesn't seem to be any case for that. So I think they've got themselves a great player there. Stoke need to find a balance with all these creative fancy Dan midfielders.
Mm.
They need to find a balance of midfield steel and creativity. But it should be a decent game between two teams that play good football.
All right.
Very hard one to call.
All right, you could use that exact same billing for Sunderland Swansea, don't you think? Sunderland Swansea. Valderez says, I was walking home from the Stadium of Light and I couldn't believe my luck. Some disgruntled Sunderland fan had nailed his season ticket to a tree. I grabbed it and put it in my pocket. I find you can never have enough nails. is that an old one? Is that worth it? We'll keep that. All right. They're odds on favourites to be relegated by their own sponsors. Odds on by their own sponsors. That the indignity of it.
It's no surprise on the evidence of their performances so far. What's more interesting is that Swansea are better than even money to win this game.
See, I don't understand betting terms enough. What's
put on a tenner and you win 11.
Right. So that doesn't sound like very good odds.
Yeah, it's 100%, 110% return on your money.
Well, yeah, if they win. But Sunderland, amidst all the disasters...
Sorry, someone give out to me for talking about gambling.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
The thing is that Sunderland last season, they used to have all sorts of disastrous performances, and then somebody would turn up that you would expect to hammer them at the Stadium of Light, and they'd manage a goalless draw or something. So I don't.
Oh, I won't be putting the farm on it or anything. No. I just think I find it odd. And the thing is, bookies don't tend to get a great deal wrong.
Swansea, terrific form. What are they going to do to the Sunderland bat line?
Well, they're going to beat them.
Ian's doing a mime of what they're going to do.
Yeah. He was jumping up and down quite and thrusting themselves here and there, which suggested, I'd say, a rough translation is a 4-0 win for Swansea.
Right.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right.
With Sunderland's players unable to sit down in the dressing room afterwards, unless they got rubber rings.
It's Saints who got taken apart on the break last weekend. They're playing on Thursday. They're at Watford, and they're this Mane stuff, that's not going to help them. They have a slightly less convincing record against sides. Last season, for example, they lost 5 away games at bottom half teams, which suggests that this is the kind of fixture they don't quite get their approach right for. And plus the fact they're taking on Midtjylland this evening in the Europa League playoffs. Is this going to be... is this a tricky game for them, do you think?
Yeah, very much so. Watford have given a good account of themselves in their first two games. They don't seem particularly overawed by the level, which is hardly surprising given the calibre of some of the players they've signed. And Southampton have got to deal with Europa League football and a number of injuries. Fraser Forster, of course, is still out. They could find this one very difficult.
Right. Hey, Bootsy Jam, let's talk West Ham. West Ham, who are... hosting Bournemouth. First off, Stuart Cooper says, what are your opinions on Alex Song joining West Ham again? Thumbs up all round, I presume, though.
Sort of.
Why?
I mean, even David Sullivan came out yesterday and said, you know, for the first half of the season, he was one of the best players we've ever signed. For the second half of the season, he was just another player. So it depends which Alex Song they get. They do need someone in there. And, of course, this is the season when the only thing that matters for West Ham is not getting relegated. Literally nothing else matters, just don't get relegated. So I guess it can't be a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. Bad news for the Hammers ahead of this visit from Bournemouth is the fact that their goalkeeper Adrian is out suspended after catching Jamie Vardy with his studs.
Someone on Twitter I saw made the point.
Adam Sharp, I've got here. Adrian was the first player sent off for adopting kicking racism out of football. Which, you know, legally, Jamie Vardy, not necessarily a racist, but certainly said some racist things.
I noticed actually in the current issue of Private Eye, they point out that it was the Sun who exposed Jamie Vardy's, inverted commas, racist shame, and then Private Eye proceeded to give a litany of examples going back over the last 2 years of when the Sun had used the same derogatory remark or phrase to describe Japanese people.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about this is that coming in, presumably for Adrian, will be Darren Randolph. Darren Randolph played Bournemouth twice last season and conceded 12 goals against them. This was for Birmingham. Yikes.
Oy. It's going to be a hard one for West Ham, depending on how Bournemouth have taken these two defeats, because in both games they played very well. I was down there for the first game of the season. They were so unlucky. 3 clear-cut chances they spurned, and then they got done at a set piece. They build up their play from the back with a defence I don't think cost more than $400,000 between all of them, and that they like to play football.
Despite their terrific result against Arsenal, when you say that the only thing West Ham need to not do this season is get relegated, that is what is going to happen to them. Which means they have to lose matches, which means this could be the first, or indeed the second. Sorry.
Well, the key thing here is that it was Ian who made it. Is your knack for putting the knack on things still intact?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have changed too much.
All right.
So
certainly Carlisle fans would go along with that.
Yeah, Crystal Palace fans, be afraid, because of what I'm going to say next.
Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, to round off our Premier League previews.
Aston Villa, they are obviously improved from what they were last season. They were terrible there. But there are still some real concerns for me there. The front three that they're playing, Jordan Ayew, who I saw a couple of times playing in France and wasn't particularly impressed, quite surprised at the size of his transfer fee. Agbonlahor doesn't seem, you know, really kind of at the level. Sinclair's been okay, but none of them scored. They've only scored one goal in the two games, and that was from a set piece. And if it is Rudy Gusted, who I like a lot, he's a big unit, who plays, they're up against Palace. That's land of the giants at the back. Lots of people who are 6'4", 6'5". They're also playing a style of football that, at the moment, seems beyond them. They give the ball away a lot when they're trying to play it out from the back. And they're up against a Crystal Palace side that doesn't really have any weak spots. They're hard-working and organised and driven.
But that's enough on the Premier League, though. Looking forward to all those games. Quick couple of posts. McSuarez says, pals, you have to do a Football Weekly Live in New York. You could fill Yankee Stadium, he says, or at least the 11th Street Bar.
I thought that idea had been mooted and then it sort of quietly disappeared. I was really looking forward to it because I've never been in New York.
Mm. If you're if you're a New York-based promoter, and there must be one or two among
us. Yeah,
then or a bookie, actually, yeah. Then that might be something you'd want to make happen because I think we'd all find time for that, wouldn't we? Yeah. Mm. Oh, Marseille. We mentioned on Monday their ongoing managerial morass, but it has been resolved in the shape of Michel, the former Spain and Real Madrid midfielder, last seen at Olympiacos, I think, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Where he initially did quite well and then stopped doing well and then they stopped having him. And now he's going to take over there. They take on Troyes this weekend.
They sold Tovan to Newcastle.
Oh, they did, didn't
Cabella's
they?
Gone the other
but
way.
They got Cabella the other way, which might be a bit of an upgrade, actually, although that's not what Newcastle fans want to hear. Speaking of other former Marseille players, we talked about Gignac. André-Pierre Gignac on Monday, and the fact that he's gone to Mexico. Here's James Viola, who gets his hipster badge by saying, I watched Tigres Jaguares on Saturday night. Gignac's hat-trick was great. I love the Liga MX, extremely competitive league in which everyone was beatable. You ever seen any Mexican action? Mexican action, Greg?
No.
All right, well, maybe... I don't even know where it's on. Do you know where it's on? Well, anyway, let's move on. I know where Serie A's on, James, and it's back this weekend. €500 million euros or pounds spent?
Euros.
€500 million spent. Tiny Carpi and fairly tiny Frosinone in the top flight for the first time. Bologna back in Serie A. And Milan, Napoli, Udinese, Sampdoria and Fiorentina all with new managers. And GLT Tech as well.
GLT Technology, yeah.
GLT Technology. So it's a shiny and exciting new season. Is it going to be any closer?
Yeah, I think it really will be. As you say, there's been €500 million spent, and I'd say €400 million of that has been spent by Juventus, the Milan clubs, and Roma. And to find that rate of spending, you have to go back to 2001 when Juventus had sold Zidane, bought Buffon, Thuram, and Nedved. Milan bought Inzaghi and Rui Costa, so it's great to see them all spending again. And also remember, last season, Serie A had more goals scored than any other major top five European league. And there have been some big signings this summer that have reinforced the challenges to Juventus, who have lost Pirlo, Tevez and Vidal. And that's where there is a sense that they might be vulnerable in the meantime while they figure things out. Although their performance in the Italian Super Cup against Lazio kind of reassured their fans because the two goal scorers, as they won that game, were the new signings Dybala and Mandzukic. But the problem for Juventus really is that team at the moment is incomplete in that they're still looking for this number 10. They've been trying to get Julian Draxler from Schalke, but they've just spent €22 million on this left back from Porto, Alexandro, who looks very, very good. But I think Roma are the best placed team to challenge them.
Right. Big signings there, of course.
Yeah. Edin Dzeko. A lot of Roma fans think that he could be to them what Gabby Batistuta was to them in 2000,
right.
i.e. the difference between...
Especially with Mo Salah pinging the crosses in.
Yeah. Salah was a revelation last year, and that was at Fiorentina, and that was a problem for Roma, was their attack ranked eighth in the league, their defence was second best. So if they can actually score more goals and in the second week of the season, Juventus have to go to Roma for what is... build as a top of the table clash, a title, an early title decider, something that'll have a bearing on it. I mean, that's the thing for Juventus. It's got a lot of things to figure out, even though they have got this very strong foundation of Buffon and that defence. But their first eight games, they go to Roma, they go to Inter, and they go to Napoli.
Right.
So it could be a stern examination of the new Juventus.
Right. The big game of round one, though, is Fiorentina-Milan, which we'll be showing live on Sunday night. Just mentioned that. Sunday night. So this kind of brings us on a little bit to the Milanese sides. Are they back? Milan, for example, 10th last time. And they've really been outspending.
Yeah, they have. They've spent in excess of 80 million, and they're not done yet. They've spent 25 million on a defender, the new Nesta, Alessio Romagnoli. They've spent another 20 million on another Roma reserve, if you like, Andrea Bertolacci, who did very well at Genoa last season. And then Carlos Bacca and Luis Adriano. And the talk that they still want Ibrahimovic won't go away. They'll make an exception if they can get Ibrahimovic between now and the end of the transfer window, as they did when they bought him in 2010, when they went on to last win the title. But I think of the teams that have upgraded, they look very good in pre-season. They already seem to have a very clear idea of how they want to play.
And how's that?
Well, 4-3-1-2. I think Sinisa Mihajlovic is just a very, very good manager. He seems to have reinvented himself from being this pantomime villain as a player to being a very cultured character in press conferences who, you know, likes to quote from JFK, Dante, Che Guevara. I think they've made the right point. Whereas at Inter, they haven't spent as much money as Milan, but they bought Jeffrey Kondogbia from Monaco for 35 million, second highest, most expensive player that they've bought of all time, behind Christian Vieri. They've bought a completely new defence. They've got Jovetic from Man City, but Mancini seems to be clutching at straws as to how this team fits together and how well it all. He doesn't seem to have the same clear ideas that Mihajlovic does. I expect it will be Roma to challenge Juventus closest, and if Inter can figure it out, they have the potential to do it.
But have they done the cleverest transfer deal of the summer anywhere in selling Kovacic to Real Madrid for, 34 million?
Yeah, 35 million, I think.
Right.
It's been interesting the last couple of weeks at Inter is that they've had to sell because they, unlike clubs whose usual approach to FFP is we have to sell to buy, Inter was kind of like, well, let's just go and buy all these players and then sell them later. So they went and spent all this money on Kondogbia, and this is one of the reasons why they've had to sell Shaqiri, sacrifice Shaqiri, and they've had to sacrifice Kovacic as well. But really, the money that Real Madrid were putting up for Kovacic was just too good to turn down.
Right.
And he is, on his day, he shows flashes of real genius, this Kovacic, as a young player. You know, one of those players who sees motorways where others see footpaths, as Boskov used to say. But they couldn't wait for him. They need people who can win now. That's very much Mancini's sort of thing.
In other Italian news, I see in the last couple of hours that, and I hate to rain on your parade, Jimmy, I know you get upset when I bring this up. Catania have been relegated to the third division.
Yeah, with a 12-point penalty. But in other match-fixing news, and this is even more of a thunderstorm on our otherwise quite enjoyable parade, is the fact that Stefano Mauri will be re-signing for Lazio. A little bit of backstory here is that he was convicted, spent time inside for match fixing, and has just escaped. The reason that they've re-signed him is that he's just escaped being involved in the proper trial for that whole series of betting. And it was
I thought you meant he escaped from prison.
Sadly not. I'm not sure if he actually had a custodial sentence, but he certainly was in one when they were collecting evidence against him. But anyway, he'd been playing for Lazio all this time. They finally get rid of him because there's this trial impending, though.
Yeah. I mean, he had a great season for them last year, but his contract was up and they chose not to renew it because they believed that he would, he wouldn't be able to play. Yeah, he'd get a long-term ban. And instead, he was exonerated.
But exonerated because they'd made an appeal to a legal body which in Italy no longer exists, which meant that they couldn't effectively do anything about his case because it was kind of stuck in turnaround. It's just the most bizarre thing. So Lazio,
just seems like such a great if you want to commit a crime, because even if you get caught bang to rights and get sent to prison, you don't have to go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's always been the case with the many match-fixing scandals in Italy.
Of course, there won't be any of that in this season's Serie A, so that's good news. Right. Anyway, that's it then for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to everybody. I feel we may even have outnumbered the viewers on the listeners on this one. But many thanks to Barry, to Ian, Greg, James, and producer Pete. He's here all next week. And you as well, listeners. Wouldn't be the same without you. Have a great weekend. We're back Monday. time. Bye.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.